You're listening to Don't Stop Us Now with Greta Thomas
and Claire Hatton. And you're in the right place if you're after inspiration, uplifting stories and practical advice from innovative and pioneering women around the globe.
We generally release a new episode every second week. And the best way to stay in the loop with us is to subscribe to our podcast on whichever streaming platform you use.
And if you're enjoying the show, help us get the word out to even more people by rating and reviewing us. We thank you so much in advance.
Indeed we do. And now to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to the show. Every now and then, we have a guest who blows us away by the scale and worthiness of their vision. And there's no doubting today's guest is one of those people.
You can surely say that again, Claire. Lee Yearsley is an AI veteran and entrepreneur with a really unique track record that speaks to her skill at anticipating the future. Raised in Zimbabwe and South Africa, Lee sold her last AI company 10 years ago to IBM. It was the first company in the world to deploy AI in businesses such as banks, insurance companies, and healthcare. Now think about that. 10 years ago, it really speaks to my mind to Lee's ability to anticipate the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And now Lee's at it again. And she's channeling her philosophy of building a global company that the world will need, not today, but in 5 years' time. Her vision is big, to become a $10 billion company with more than 100 million customers worldwide. Her business is called Akin, and Lee's determination to use technology for good has seen her incorporate as a public benefit corporation. Now, that's an American legal entity that embeds a business model that benefits both shareholders and society.
Yeah, it's great. Akin is bringing a new and more advanced type of AI to market called adaptive reasoning, as you'll hear more about it when we have our conversation. And it already has customers ranging from NASA to healthcare companies who have disabled clients, for example.
Now, despite the fact Lee has a track record of selling several businesses and has been involved in AI for decades, it's not all been plain sailing. She shares with us just how difficult it is to raise funding as a female founder, something we talked about recently with our last guest, venture capitalist Marissa Warren.
Yeah, Lee's capital raising stories are pretty incredible and you'll get
certainly
to hear them.
Certainly are.
In this episode, you'll hear how Lee was positively dissuaded, if not barred, from studying computer science at uni because she was a woman. How she says she ignores the accepted wisdom of how to build a successful startup and that other women should ignore it too. How pervasive AI systems already are in our lives and just how much they're already influencing the decisions we make in a negative way. And the creative and unique way Lee goes about envisioning, building, and growing her business.
We were lucky to spend time with Lee after she spoke at the Impact Investment Summit in Sydney recently, and we were blown away. And we think you will be too.
We do indeed. So enjoy this episode with the big thinking and genuinely pioneering Lee Yearsley.
Lee Yearsley, welcome to Don't Stop Us Now.
Thank you.
It's so good to have you on the show. We've just watched you speak at the Impact Investing Asia Pacific conference, and there were so many jaws on the floor. So we know this is going to be a fascinating conversation. So we'll kick off with our first question that we ask all of our guests, which is, if you met someone for the first time at a dinner party and they asked you, what do you do, Lee? How would you answer them?
I build alternate humans. I have been building artificial intelligence systems for pretty much my whole life. And I think it's a species that we're creating that we're going to co-evolve with. So I'm building a form of AI that's more conscious and more empathic. And that's something we can be proud of having created.
Wow. I bet that becomes the main conversation at the dinner table. Creating a whole new species, that's something absolutely incredible. And we'll get into that in a little bit later. But you said you've been doing this for 20 years. I think most people think that generative AI is something that's sort of relatively new, but
it's been around for a really long time, hasn't it?
It has. AI has actually been around since the 50s or 60s. We're in the second wave and there's a third wave coming. So our first wave was what we call symbolic reasoning or top-down AI, where you're basically teaching an AI about the nature of things and how they relate to each other. So you're saying this is a cup, this is water, water goes in cup, you know, this is a flower, it belongs to plant. And these AI had the ability to reason to an extent. The AI industry overhyped them. Or the investor industry overhyped them and there was a crash. But we still use these today. So we had the next wave of AI, which was present earlier but started gaining dominance in the 80s. That's called statistical learning or probabilistic AI. So we've actually had the algorithms that are powering the rock star AI today been around for about 20 or 30 years. We're just getting better at it. The hype right now is generative means we're just looking at the output side of it. So let's say we put 1,000 human beings in a room that each have a cup of coffee in their hand and we say, hey, everyone, go up to the whiteboard and draw a cup of coffee. What's the highest average cup of coffee that's going to emerge? That's a generative output.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So instead of looking at the input side, like, what is this? Is this a coffee cup? Yes or no? We're now going, well, okay, we know all this stuff about coffee cups. We've seen 1,000 of them. Make a new one. So that's really what it's doing. It's just vomiting up the highest probability of the most average output.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone sees it as quite sensational because it's almost magical. But that's what it's doing. It's churning data. Now, if you took the compute that an AI takes to draw a line drawing of a coffee cup or say, hello, how are you? And you dropped it into your brain, you would melt your brain. So obviously humans are doing something different. We don't need a trillion tokens.
Yeah, right.
We're not having an input-output dialogue here. You're trying to figure out who I am. I'm trying to figure out who you are. We're trying to figure out what our audience is interested in. We're changing state. We're working in a complex dynamic system. We're doing this with, you know, very little about me. I know very little about people listening to this, but we're doing this because we have what's called adaptive reasoning. So we build these real-time dynamic models. They're like an abstraction of the future and we run them and we're good at it. And so there's a new wave of AI called adaptive reasoning AI that we're working on at Akin in our laboratory.
How did you come to be embarking on the audacious challenge of wanting to pioneer in adaptive AI, which feels like it's sort of an overwhelmingly huge task?
Yeah, it's just a very simple story. I was an incredibly awkward teenager and my dad took me to see Star Wars when I was really young. I think the founder of iRobot shares the story as well. You know, and I was absolute social outcast. I was a refugee from Zimbabwe. We were broke, like so poor. And, you know, I just fell in love with this idea that we could build a version of humanity that was kinder than we were. You know, I lived in a civil war.
And that was in Central Africa, was it?
Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe.
And, you know, at the same time, I was, I had this orthodontist who made me wear braces with headgear to school. So the only interaction I had with anyone was him throwing stuff at me, you know, and stealing my stuff. And so I joined the computer club. So I hung out with the nerds and I learned to code. And, that was it for me. That's my lifelong love. So, I built my first, now we'd call it an AI company. Then I just called it a predictive inference search engine. You know, I built a search engine. I was one of the inventors and I was a CEO and founder and that company went public on the ASX. We were doing very, very good. We could very rapidly read who you were and figure out what you'd want to see.
And that was back in
2005.
Which is early.
Yeah. And then I took the money I made from that and I invested in a pure AI company. This was 6 years before Siri came out and pretty much everyone said, what are you doing? There's an AI winter. No one's going to ever want to talk to an AI, you know. But I just felt there was a new wave coming. I felt that there was too much information, too much pressure in people's lives. And we just had to give, you know, we had to reduce the cognitive cycles of life. And so AI was inevitable to me. I started, it was originally called My Cybertwin. So dorky, because we wanted to democratize AI. So you should just go, there's my data. Go build another me. I'm going on holiday. Do life. Bye.
That actually sounds really good.
Yeah, I'm still working on that now because I wanted to do my life. I'm a working mother and, oh boy, life is complicated. So, you know, that was the idea. We won a federal government grant. We built a new approach and we were able to build very complex human-level AI pretty fast. And there was no venture funding. Females get about 2% of venture funding and we get 0.7% in AI.
Yeah,
so
incredible.
I just came straight out of grantland into deployments. We were the first in the world to put a frontline AI on a bank anywhere. We're first in insurance, first in tech support, first in health, first in media. So we built companion characters like Inflection's trying to do now. We built, you know, now we go in a bank, we've got a customer support agent. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Behind that, it's crunching millions of bits of data about you, your life path, what's going on, how do I persuade you to do this or that. We've got AI in retail. It's, you know, pushing us what to buy. We've got AI in TV and media selection. We've got AI everywhere. We just don't know it.
And I mean, that must have been quite something when you were doing this, especially with take the banks, you know, because banks now, let alone 15 years ago, incredibly male dominated financial services, typically.
Yeah.
To be taken seriously with a kind of out there technology at the time, which given the conservative nature of bankers, what was your secret in kind of persuading them to go with
Look,
your
business? I'm just going to be really blunt. I know there's probably a lot of women listening to this. I must have read 1,000 articles on how to build a startup and books and spoken to VC. And we all have this playbook handed to us and it's just rubbish. And the reason you get there is this secret, not so secret thing. If you, belief is incredible. What I learned over the years, when I started my first business was actually in Africa. It was a franchise that I was running and I had this idea of how many franchises I wanted and that sort of magically happened. I thought, how did that happen? And I realized we've got this thing called cognitive dissonance. So we don't like external reality and internal reality to not match. There's a famous, I'm rambling a little bit, but you can leverage as a female founder, you don't listen to people saying, oh, you've just got to get product market fit, then I'll give you money. You just got to do this. And you don't want their money. You're building a $1 billion company. You just go build that. You don't run the playbook. You run your own book. You visualize that company that you're building, its shape in the world, the power it has in the world, how it's going to reach 1 billion lives, and you hack your way there. That's what you do. And I have listed a company, my AI company that I was talking about got acquired by IBM. At the time of acquisition, we had over 8 Fortune 100 companies using it. We had 20,000 developers. We were in hockey stick revenue growth. We did not get venture backing. I must have done 1,000 pitches in my career. I do 3 a week and I've had 1 A round and they replaced me with a guy within like 2 months.
Incredible.
I kid you not. I don't want you to take this as being a terrible thing, but what I'm saying is you're going to get down if you buy the playbook.
There's alternative pathways.
Exactly. Like, you know, for every 1 month that a guy pitches, I have to pitch 100 months to have the same probability of getting that funding. You're going to get token check funding, 1/10 of the male peers, and they're going to go, why don't you do more? So just don't. The goal is not venture. The goal is to build a $1 billion company. If you walk around taking on board what the world tells you, it's so hard. You know, we get all this pushback as female founders. How are you going to meet the challenges? You know, if we take that on board, that becomes our reality. But you can make it work the other way.
So how have you had the work to have such a unique lens?
Yeah. So what I do is I literally create a vision board. I know it sounds cliche, but it's not just I'm going to have a big shiny house, but like, this is the impact I'm going to have. I think about what I want my personal life to look like, the gravity that I want in the world, or I want my company to have. And it's sort of shape. Like, I don't know exactly how Akin's going to get to be a $10 billion listed company. That's still public benefit and still for good. But I do know that we're working with AI that are going to become more evolved and more thinking. I do know we're going to make people's lives better, not worse. And I don't just mean this in a superficial way. Like, we use AI all the time, every day, and it's nudging us to slouching in front of TV, eating more takeout, staring at our screens. We are building AI that gets you to live a more actualized life. I know that. I know that we're going to have 100 million people using it. And I know we're going to measure, are they socially connected? Are they happier? Are we healthier? Is our ecological footprint going down because we've changed how we behave in daily life? I don't know exactly how we're going to get there. I've got a kind of an idea. And then we experiment with these ideas.
That brings me to something you said earlier, which is 10 to 15% of our decisions in our daily lives are already sort of subterraneously very much influenced by the AI that's already in our lives. So it makes what you're saying now all the more powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. So people think of AI as going off to ChatGPT and having a chat and going, oh, that's freaky good. But what you don't realize is, you know, you've got this thing probably glued to the end of your hand called a phone. We didn't have them 15 years ago. If we lose it, it feels like something's missing. It's an AI engine. It's reading your micro expressions when you look at news, when you're looking at a map. It's nudging you to watch TV, to consume media. Today, you're probably living a different life to what you lived 10 years ago. Americans are buying more takeaway than groceries. You're probably scrolling news a lot more than you used to, at the cost of turning around and looking at the person next to you and saying, how are you? We're watching hours of television a day, which has changed. We're consuming goods and services as if they'll make us happy. And I think one of the most sinister ones we've seen is the influence of thought and media and public thinking. I sat in the offices of a social media giant a few years ago, and we had an AI that could do predictive inference and figure out audience patterns and where they were going, their life trajectories. And I said, we want to find people who are at risk, kids, young people, and we want to identify them and do something about it, maybe just create a little alert that they can reach out to someone if they need help, or, you know, find out who, because people target these young people. And this company said, can you tell Republicans from Democrats? And we said, yes, but I said, that's not why we're here. And then they said, can we use this to decide what news we put in front of them so we get more attention? And I said, yes, but that's not why we're here. And I walked out.
Wow.
But most people wouldn't.
Yeah. I think that's the point, isn't it? Most people wouldn't.
Yeah.
And you are sticking to your core values.
Yeah. But what we have to think about, though, is that, you know, all this rhetoric about, you know, AI for good, really what's happening is big tech has actually shifted how we live, and it's not all for the good. And AI is going to be cranking up that persuasion dial. And we don't have a mindful approach to this. We are rewarding this increased consumption, this increased addiction at the expense of the environment and human values and all of the things that make us better as humanity. And I'm a mom, and I think AI needs a mom. Yeah. You know, I want something that I can trust, that if I'm at work and my kids are alone with the TV or their computer or their phone or their friends, you know that our life's going to get better. I want to know that we're eating better, that we're conscious of our environmental footprint. I want to know that we're consuming media, we're making decisions. You know, AI already probably picking where you're going on holiday just by nudging the right stuff in front of you at the right times, probably impacting your food choices more than you used to. You're probably eating more takeout. You're probably watching more TV. You're definitely watching more news.
And what path do you see for us to actually get from where we are today, where 10 to 15% of all of our decisions are being manipulated, to it feels like that's going to be a lot more going down the path if something doesn't change. What is the path to a better outcome versus the one that is going to happen?
All I can think of is what I'm doing, because I can do what I'm doing, which is building a different form of AI.
About listeners who are non-technical? Is there anything we can do?
Yeah. Something I tell people often is just take a log for a week and write down a baseline of your life. You know, your hours. How are you spending your time? You will never get, but you can, money's infinite, power's infinite, everything's infinite, time is not. How are you spending it? And then step back and then check that baseline once in a while. I would also be very, very thoughtful about the voice that you have. Every one of us is a part of society. Society, by definition, is a group of people. So if one person changes, by definition, you've changed society. I learned this as an anti-apartheid protester in Africa. It was insurmountable. And one of our lecturers said, that's us. If you change, you have changed society. So think about the technology you're using. Think about when you open your mouth to say, oh, that's awesome, or that's not. Think about it. Everything has impact. Everything does.
It seems like a really timely thing for Lee to tell us a little bit briefly about Akin and when you started it. And
So Akin, I actually worked at IBM for about 2 years, and then I was not allowed to work in AI for a year after I left because I was also one of the inventors. But I could think. I tried to be a normal person.
How did that go?
I went to art college, and that was fun, and, you know, did a lot of not-for-profit work. But I knew that this AI was coming that was going to be so pervasive and was going to take over pretty much all of our jobs at some point in the future.
Really? You really think that?
Yeah. So it's simple math. Like, as an AI developer, where you go first is you go where there's high volume, high value. But that's usually harder. So you go high volume, low complexity, like customer support or, you know, social chit chat or generate an image. Then that gets crowded and commoditized. And you go, okay, let me go high volume, high complexity, higher complexity. But you know, the only reason we're not like a fund manager or a podcast interviewer or a teacher is it's lower volume and high complexity. But eventually that as the cost of compute comes down and as AI get more sophisticated, everything's going to change.
And so what's Akin setting out to build?
Yeah. So Akin, we believe we were the world's first public benefit AI company. It's now become trendy to put the PBC label, but most of them not actually acting like public benefit. We have a mission. So it's a social impact mission. So we are a for-profit company, but we're allowed to march to the beat of this mission. And our mission is the responsible co-evolution of AI and humanity. So the word Akin means to be like something. And to be part of the family. So we're building AI that think and reason more like humans, but they're a trusted part of your family. So it should be like an other you, you know, that helps you run your life, run your reports, make your decisions, take care of the cognitive mess of life and physical. We're building robots as well, because I don't want to be doing dishes 10 years from now. You know, that takes care of the stuff of life and does it in a way that I would do it if it was me for someone that I loved. And that's what we're building. So it's like an AI that you want to be part of your family.
And what are the use cases currently?
Yeah. Again, a few years from now, we want to be in 100 million homes. We want it to be a personal AI for anyone. So, you know, it takes today about 25 hours a week in unpaid labor to run the average human home. You know, putting food on the table, figuring out what we're going to do. Has everyone got what they need? Have we got our homework ready? Generating reports for work, even just the stuff of daily living, it's called. So caring for others, that's 40% of GDP. You know, you've now got this impossible social tension where, you know, the new generation of mums and dads have this incredible paid workload. But the time cost of running the home has not changed in 50 years. So why would I go out and build an AI that's going to shave 10 seconds off pizza delivery time or, you know, make a better haiku poem or create a pixie with purple ears when I got a 25-hour-a-week problem that I sit with just to be a working mother? And that's what we're hacking away at. So use cases today, we are actually getting a lot of uptake from mums. We have a personal AI that runs homes. Usually takes the form of a family dashboard with an AI that can talk to all different members of the family, coordinate schedules and food and stuff. Most of our advanced experimentation has been in the space environment. So we've worked on the perfect habitat. We built it's been a paid deployment by the federal government, an ambient habitat manager, physical robots that do task support. That's been a lot of fun. We're getting a lot of uptake at the moment in homes that have disability or an aging parent. But the goal is that anyone should have one. Should cost you like nothing, like $5 a month. And it should be like putting dollars in your bank and giving you back an hour a day and making your life better. That's where I want to go.
Sounds like bliss.
Yes.
The women of the world are already.
Yeah. So just give me $1 billion to build it faster. That would be great.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really intrigues me about you is that you are a technologist. You actually coded, you've built, you've got patents, but you're also extremely commercial, it appears. What do you think is the reason why you have got those amazing attributes? You don't see that very often. It's relatively unique.
I didn't set out with them. I actually applied to do coding at university. And at that point, we moved to South Africa. And the dean sat there and said to me, "Lady," he said, "look around. You can apply if you like." Excuse my accent. Yeah, but there's no ladies here. So I was straight A, but I didn't get into. So I had to do extra classes. I learned to code by doing, you know, after hours.
So what did you study?
I started studying medicine. I was going to be a doctor. I worked in hospitals for 2 years. Ran out of money because I had to pay everything. There was no HEX or no loan system. And then I ended up studying education psychology because I had little kids then. And then my postgrads in venture development. And I've got an on-off PhD in AI that I keep stopping and starting because, like, it's hard work, PhD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not like you're not doing anything else.
Yeah. But no, look at the commercial thing to me. I kept waiting for this magical commercial person. Like a lot of women I hear say, "Oh, I've just got to find a technical person." No, you don't. You just got to figure out what it is you're going to build. And, you know, you hire people and then you watch them and you learn and you don't tell them you don't know what they're doing. You just do some coding courses at night, learn about agile methodologies. Don't let them act like they know more than you, because they don't. You know what you want to see. You know what the output of it is that you want to see. It gives us a unique advantage, because I'm often good at feeling what a product feels like for the end user. And the non-commercial, again, it's just the shape of it. Like, how am I going to get in 100 million homes? How am I going to do that? You know, okay, I'm going to win this enterprise deal over here that'll bootstrap us with, you know, 10 million revenue contract. And then I'm going to launch a practically free version. How do I do that? Okay, why don't I just go talk to a couple of thousand families and see what bothers them, what they want me to fix first. And then we go code it.
So it's problem solving, basically.
Pretty much, you know, yeah. Like, and so what I was saying earlier, I don't build a business plan. I build what I call valuation drivers. So what are the fulcrums of value? And it's an exercise. You spend months doing this. Like, what is the shape of what's coming in the world? What does my 5-year from now company look like and feel like? And then what's going to drive value?
How do you keep going? Where do you get your energy?
I had a few experiences when I was really young where I didn't know if I was going to be alive the next day, you know? And they're quite formative, because you really stop. You can't collapse in fear. You can't. But what you do is you just drink in this moment that you live in. You are a unique being. You're a precious pattern of energy that has been put on this earth. And you are here for a reason. And that reason is not to shrink or not shine. You're there to shine. You're there to make manifest power in the world. I think time should be spent that way. You know, so I often, even now, I'll look at a day and I'll go, I just spend like 8 hours doing admin. I really shouldn't be doing this. Is that manifesting my power? Should I be hiring someone to do that? You know, so you start slicing up your time and where you put your focus and your energy around, if this was the last day that I was on this earth, how would I use it? And that might not be for you building a billion-dollar company. You know, I don't want $1 billion. What I want is a different world. I want a world where we don't have despots getting elected, where, you know, we're not melting our planet, where our children grow up kinder, where I can rest knowing I've done something about that. You know, that's what I want. But every one of us has that version of self. And this time we've been given is just the most precious thing.
That's so inspiring, actually. And you anticipated my next question, because it was all about, you know, how would you define success? But I think you just articulated what drives you and what success looks like for you. And I think I join certainly Claire and probably every single listener going, please, we are behind you all the way with that mission, and may your success be achieved sooner rather than later. You know, if you had a message for our listeners in terms of whether they should be informing themselves about AI or, as you sort of say, monitoring their time, you know, what would you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the revolution that's coming is going to be no less insignificant than the Industrial Revolution. In many ways, you know, the Industrial Revolution, we were replacing muscle with machines. 150 years ago, I could not be doing what I'm doing. We had a more unequal society, because my job as a woman would have been to shell peas, push a hoe in the fields and push out babies. And because we took the power that muscle gave and we equalized it, we now have a society where I'm able to do what I do. We're still not an equal society, but AI is going to be that transformative. So women in particular, we have to be part of this game. So educate yourself, use it, believe that you can do technology as well as anybody, whether or not you have an education in it. And be part of the coming wave. That's what I'd say about AI. About owning your power, I'd say just own that. Don't listen to people, listen to yourself. Own that vision of who you want to be. If you're growing a company, your company is a function of power over time. It's not venture over time, it's power over time. You got to get your heel in there, in that door, and you get that first deal, that next step of power. You don't get that from outside. You get that from you. And what you're putting into people's lives, that they go, that is great. I want to use that and I want to tell my friends about it. That's where you get power as you grow a business.
Well, amazing words and hopefully great inspiration for listeners and motivation for all of us to make sure we are active in this. Lee, it's been such an inspiring and fascinating conversation. We wish you all the very best with Akin and your fantastic mission with Akin. If listeners want to learn more about Akin or you, where should they go?
Our website is akin.com. I think we have info@akin.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I do get reached out to a lot on LinkedIn, so please just give me one line.
Thank you so much, Lee.
It's my pleasure. I've actually never done a podcast before. I just realized I kept bumping.
Wow.
I know.
No, it was brilliant. Thank you so much.
Lee's stories of struggling to raise capital are incredible to me, given firstly her track record of building successful AI businesses. I mean, how many people have had a successful exit from an AI business?
We only know one or two, I think, at most.
Exactly. And then just how hot AI is right now.
Yeah, no, it's pretty incredible. You know, and I think maybe because Lee is also such an original thinker and she's clearly not just motivated by pure profit, thank goodness, maybe that's also another reason traditional VC investors aren't getting it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. You know, I loved in this interview hearing how Lee literally uses a vision board and then has this incredible belief about what she can create.
Yeah, me too.
There's so much to visualization, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, our thoughts and our beliefs are so important, and the power of visualizing, whilst used quite a lot in sport, has a huge and untapped potential in business too, I think.
Yeah, I think so. For us as individuals, you know, to be able to be clear about a vision and then have belief in that, it's very powerful. Clearly, we also all have homework now, if we didn't already, and that's to be sure we're educating ourselves about AI and that we own our power to be a part of this new wave of AI and the third industrial revolution or whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely, and that's a huge topic we could spend a lot of time on. Well, that's this episode done and dusted.
We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, but in the meantime, have a great week, get learning, and ciao for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.